In 1986, Robert Gallo announced the discovery of human herpes virus, HHV6. This new pathogen was no benign retrovirus. It was instead a savage, cell-killing DNA virus. Gallo's lab had found the murderous HHV6 killer cells in the blood of AIDS-infected men and in patients suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome, CFS. An immune deficiency disease extremely similar to AIDS that had appeared in heterosexuals on the exact same timeline as AIDS appeared in homosexuals. Many critics already suspected the two diseases were one and the same. Gallo's discovery seemed to fortify that supposition. In a 1995 article titled Human Herpes Virus 6 in AIDS, Gallo says, HHV6 may act as an accelerating factor in HIV infection because HHV6 can also infect and kill CD8 plus T cells, natural killer cells, and mononuclear phagocytes, all major components of the immune system. Ironically, Gallo's discovery of HHV6 might have won him the Nobel Prize if he hadn't jumped the gun a decade earlier by stealing HIV from Montagnier. None of the embarrassing questions about how in the world the seemingly benign HIV retrovirus could cause deadly disease bedeviled his lethal new killing machine. While HIV was never shown to be cytocidal, HHV6 had a murderous affinity for CD4 and T-cell in potential effects on the immune system and brains. Gallo declared that HHV6 was a major source of disease progression in AIDS. On May 11, 1988, the Miami Herald reported Gallo's announcement, a newly discovered highly contagious herpes virus might play a role in causing several types of cancer and could be a cofactor in wiping out the immune systems of AIDS patients, one of the nation's premier virologists, Robert Gallo, said Tuesday. The Herald also wrote, since the AIDS virus kills only a small percentage of T4 cells at a time, Gallo said the new herpes virus, HHV6, if proven to be the cofactor, could explain the total annihilation of T4 cells in AIDS patients. The virus kills cells after using them to replicate, he says. The Herald quotes Gallo as saying, so if a cofactor is involved in the development of AIDS, and I'm not convinced it's absolutely needed, then we want to consider this one strongly. Charles Ortlieb told me that Gallo's study struck me as being backwards. If Gallo's new DNA virus explains the total annihilation of T4 cells, why would it need a cofactor? The cofactor in this mystery would have to be HIV, not HHV6. Some scientists had similar reservations. HHV6 didn't seem to need a retrovirus wingman. Duisberg remarked dryly that to the extent that Gallo's newly discovered pathogen was partnering with HIV, then HHV6 was the senior partner in the collaboration. I can't help wondering if it occurred then to Gallo that if only he had not impetuously stolen Montagnier's discovery 4 years earlier, he might have collected his long-sought Nobel for his own authentic discovery of a much more plausible AIDS virus. Alas, it was not to be. But Dr. Fauci had committed his agency to the HIV hypothesis, and Gallo had built his career on HIV. Even if he stole it from Montagnier, says Charles Ortlieb. When Gallo began that battle with Fauci, says Ortlieb, the agency was already fully committed to the HIV theory and could not afford any signs of retreat. I asked, why would Gallo not pull rank? Ortlieb answered, Gallo is a classic sociopath. He knows that his survival means acquiescing to Fauci. Following Gallo's Natural Killer Cells article, other researchers confirmed the links between HHV6 and AIDS. In 1996, Constance Knox, Ph.D., and Donald R. Kerrigan, Ph.D., published a study demonstrating that 100% of HIV-infected patients studied, 10 out of 10, had active human herpes virus 6A infections in their lymph nodes early in the course of their disease. This finding led Knox and Kerrigan to conclude that active HHV6 infections appear relatively early in the course of HIV disease, and in vitro studies suggest that HHV6 is capable of breaking HIV latency, with the potential for helping to catalyze the progression of HIV infection to AIDS. In April 1986, Dr. Knox stated in an interview with the New York Native, "We're finding HHV6 in the lymph nodes, early active infection. This virus is replicating. This is unheard of for any other opportunistic infection, even TB. Knox said she believed that HIV kind of acts as a wet nurse to HHV6A. Knox and Kerrigan found that every AIDS patient had active replication of HHV6A in every stage of AIDS, from their diagnosis to their autopsies, with many having CD4 plus cell counts over 700. With HHV6A, there were none of the bewildering questions about how a seemingly benign retrovirus could possibly cause all that carnage. It's also much more destructive. It kills very well, and it destroys tissue very well. It can infect the brain, the lungs, the lymphoid organs, and the bone marrow." When New York Native interviewer Nina Ostrom asked Knox, "Can HHV6A do everything that HIV can do?" Knox gave this chilling answer. "As far as immunologic damage, oh, HHV6A does it much more efficiently than HIV." Citing data from multiple studies by diverse scientists, Knox added, "Where we have seen HHV6A in tissue, we see dead tissue. And where you see HIV alone, you don't see dead tissue. You don't see destroyed organs and scar formation. And that's what you see when you see HHV6A. We find replacement of the normal architecture of the lymph nodes with scar tissue. HHV6A kills it. It kills the lymph node tissue." Knox parroted the obligatory language that HHV6 was acting in concert with HIV. That language would preserve her from reputational and financial suicide. "I think they're a team," she said. "And when the two of them are present, they induce the production of more of each other. It's a mutually enhancing relationship. It's our feeling that if you could interrupt or limit or suppress the HHV6A infection, the levels of HIV would go down tremendously, and HIV would become just a chronic viral infection. We don't have any evidence looking in the tissue that HIV is responsible for any of the destruction. And if you think about it, HIV infects patients for years, a decade or more, without progressing to AIDS. When you look in their tissues, you have to ask how you can have such a long-term viral infection and have no damage." NIH quickly cut off funding for Knox and for anyone else who wanted to research HHV6. When Nina Ostrom asked, "Why can't you get more funding for this research?" Knox replied, "Well, I don't know if you've been tracking the kinds of exposés that Science Magazine and others have published, that 80% of AIDS research monies are retained within the federal government programs on AIDS research. I think the science is very inbred, and I think there's been a real resistance to entertaining hypotheses or directions of AIDS research that aren't looking specifically at HIV, and that is the basic problem. Our studies themselves have been enthusiastically received, but the funding hasn't followed. And that is funding through the federal agencies, like the NIH. That summer, Italian researcher Dario De Luca published his findings in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology, reporting HHV6 in the lymph nodes of 22% of chronic fatigue syndrome patients and only 4% of healthy people. This research raised the possibility that AIDS, which affects gay men, is the same disease as CFS, which became widespread in heterosexuals and in virtual lockstep with AIDS in the early 1980s. Surveys of CFS patient groups in 35 states show an exponential rise in cases produced each year since the 1970s. This curious temporal and case production relationship with the AIDS epidemic prompted many researchers to characterize CFS as an AIDS epiphenomenon. Gallo's discovery and Knox's revelations suggested that the new human herpes virus, HHV6, might be a critical causative cofactor shared by both AIDS and CFS. In June 1989, CFS research pioneer Dr. Paul Chaney, Ph.D., M.D., testified before Congress that CFS might have a relationship with the AIDS epidemic. In January 1993, 6 months after the Amsterdam conference, Dr. Anthony Komaroff at Harvard University and his co-workers published a study that showed that brain lesions developed in CFS patients who had human herpes virus 6 active in their bodies. Such revelations could only have terrified Tony Fauci. Ever since the 1992 Amsterdam meeting, Dr. Fauci had been insisting that CFS was a psychosomatic disease. The suggestion that it might be related to AIDS threatened the entire HIV paradigm. In their 1988 Natural Killer Cells paper, Lusso and Gallo had quietly disclosed that they had found HHV6 was infecting and killing NK cells in both AIDS and CFS patients. They identified the problem in both sets of patients, said Knox, so it makes sense that the HHV6A would also be a problem in chronic fatigue syndrome. When Gallo and Lusso conducted a trial treating half their AIDS patients with acyclovir, a remedy against herpes, and half with AZT alone, they found a significant prolongation of life in the patients who had AZT and acyclovir, as opposed to AZT alone. Said Knox, in laboratory testing, HHV6A is sensitive to acyclovir, so we have a curiosity as well. I mean, that would be pretty dandy, because certainly acyclovir has less toxicity than AZT, and if you're talking about treating healthy people in a clinical trial, you're looking for something that people can take orally. These kinds of findings threaten to derail and discredit Anthony Fauci's entire HIV/AIDS paradigm. What, after all, would be the implications if a mild, off-patent remedy like acyclovir could safely treat AIDS more effectively than Dr. Fauci's expensive pharmacopoeia of deadly chemotherapy poisons? He choked off any further funding for HHV6 research, despite Knox's potentially life-saving discovery of the efficacy of acyclovir against AIDS. Mycoplasma. Dr. Xing Lo, the chief researcher in charge of AIDS programs for the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, was one of the many researchers baffled by Anthony Fauci's unconventional claim that antibodies, heretofore the signal of a robust immune response, should uniquely with HIV instead be the signal for impending death. That was a bridge too far for Dr. Lo. He took the conventional position that the presence of the antibodies to HIV, far from being a sign of doom, is proof that the body has coped successfully with the virus. There is no good explanation for why and how the virus breaks out of the antibody protection, complained Dr. Lo. I'm not saying that HIV plays no role in AIDS. The data shows a clear correlation with disease. He recited the mandatory disclaimer, but AIDS is much more complicated than HIV. In 1986, Dr. Lo announced that he had detected a previously unknown organism in cells taken from AIDS patients. Dr. Lo said that he believed the new organism, a bacterium-like creature known as a mycoplasma, worked with HIV to cause AIDS. Dr. Lowe could not find the organism in any healthy individuals. When he injected his mycoplasma into four silvered leaf monkeys, three quickly developed low-grade fevers. All four lost weight and then died between 7 and 9 months of infection. During autopsy, Dr. Lowe found mycoplasma in their brains, livers, and spleens. That does not happen with HIV. Dr. Lowe also found the mycoplasma, dubbed Mycoplasma incognitus, in the damaged tissue of 6 HIV-negative human beings, perhaps CFS sufferers, who had died with suppressed immune systems after suffering from suspiciously AIDS-like symptoms. For nearly 3 years, mainstream medicine and the captive mainstream and science media dutifully ignored Dr. Lowe's research. A dozen scientific journals turned down Xing Lowe's studies for publication before the Journal of Tropical Medicine agreed to print his findings. Despite his impressive credentials and his prestigious post as a top military scientist, Dr. Lowe's attempts to find funding failed. Dr. Lowe's research posed a unique annoyance for Dr. Fauci. Because he was a top military doctor with his own laboratory, he could not be easily dismissed, bullied, or defunded. Then, in December 1989, Dr. Fauci opted to meet this threat from the military with a direct frontal assault. NIAID dispatched a dozen of Dr. Fauci's most skeptical specialists to investigate Dr. Lowe's data. Dr. Fauci flew his leading experts in AIDS and other infectious diseases to San Antonio, Texas, for the confrontation, expecting to obliterate Dr. Lowe and to discredit his theory. Dr. Fauci's panel members quizzed Dr. Lowe mercilessly for 3 days before surrendering to the conclusion that Dr. Lowe had made a momentous discovery. "The documentation was absolutely solid," said Joseph Tully, head of mycoplasma programs for NIAID. The newly converted NIAID participants formally recommended further study of the link between the mycoplasma and AIDS and experiments with drugs that could kill the new microbe. The recommendation apparently displeased Dr. Fauci. "We have not been pulled into the AIDS programs in any real way," Tully complained in 1990. 35 years after Dr. Lowe's initial announcement, NIAID has still funded no research on Dr. Lowe's mycoplasma hypothesis. At the June 1990 San Francisco AIDS conference, Luc Montagnier made his tectonic announcement that the HIV virus is harmless and passive, a benign virus. He added that he had discovered that HIV only becomes dangerous in the presence of a second organism. He described a tiny bacteria-like bug called a mycoplasma. His laboratory had demonstrated that in culture with his new mycoplasma, HIV becomes a vicious killer. Montagnier declared that he now believes that HIV is a peaceful virus that becomes lethal only when combined with Mycoplasma infertens. As Montagnier spoke, Dr. Xing Lowe sat in the audience, basking in vindication. Dr. Lowe's important new ally, Montagnier, the Nobel laureate of AIDS, had independently discovered the same mycoplasma and concluded, like Lowe, that it was the primary cause of the immune system collapse known as AIDS. The two had not shared their data. Separately, they had made the same earth-shaking discovery 4 months apart. In April of that year, Montagnier published his findings in Research in Virology, reporting that HIV and the microscopic pathogen react together, causing the body's cells to burst. Even more exciting, he had discovered that in his test tubes, tetracycline stopped the mycoplasma's destruction entirely in its tracks. Montagnier's findings had transformative implications for AIDS treatment. They suggested that AIDS could be effectively treated and demolished with common, patent-expired antibiotics instead of deadly and expensive chemotherapy concoctions. At the San Francisco conference, Dr. Lowe was almost the only person in the room who was excited. Of the 12,000 people who attended the conference, only 200 attended Montagnier's talk, and almost half of them exited before he finished. Characteristically, the multi-billion-dollar international research and development establishment opted to ignore his discovery. Peter Duisberg said, "There was Montagnier, the Jesus of HIV, and they threw him out of the temple." Who were these people who are so much wiser, so much smarter than Luc Montagnier, asks Harry Rubin, the dean of American retrovirology. He became an outlaw as soon as he started saying that HIV might not be the only cause of AIDS. When asked for an interview concerning Dr. Lowe's work, NIAID Director Anthony Fauci said through spokesperson Mary Jane Walker that he will not talk about mycoplasma or any other AIDS cofactor. In a film interview with Brent Leung in 2006, Tony Fauci said, "Cofactors are not necessary. The data that indicate that any different type of infection, like mycoplasma or something like that, is a necessary cofactor, I believe those theories have been debunked." As usual, Dr. Fauci never cited the study that debunked the work of America's top military AIDS researcher or the Nobel laureate who discovered HIV. 34 years later, with over half $1 trillion spent on AIDS research, Dr. Fauci has not budgeted $1 to study the role of Lowe's and Montagnier's mycoplasma or Ngalo's and Knox's HHV6 virus in the etiology of AIDS. Between 1981 and 2020, U.S. taxpayers alone shelled out $640 billion for AIDS research, focused almost exclusively on developing drugs to address Dr. Fauci's sketchy HIV hypothesis. Yet the growing list of medications hasn't demonstrably extended the life of a single patient, and the cure for AIDS is still nowhere in sight. The minute someone suggests that the orthodoxy might be wrong, the establishment starts to call him crazy or a quack, Rubin continued. One week you're a great scientist, the next week you're a jerk. Science has become the new Church of America and is closing off all room for creative, productive dissent. After suggesting in print 2 years earlier that HIV might need a co-cofactor to cause AIDS, Gallo went dark. Gallo today refuses to discuss the matter. The normally loquacious and combative Gallo refused my request to talk about HHV6. AIDS and fear. In a rational universe, or in a functioning democracy, combatants would duke out the incendiary HIV-AIDS dispute in an open public debate in the scientific literature between the foremost establishment scientists and the best-credentialed dissenting ones. But in Tony Fauci's authoritarian technocracy, the ruling medical cabal refuses to allow this sort of dialogue. Like Inquisition priests, HIV's high clergy stubbornly resist the possibility that they might be wrong. From the outset, the HIV-AIDS religion has seen its survival in moral absolutism, outright discrimination, and merciless suppression of doubt. Dr. Harvey Bealey argues that the medical establishment's top concern is not public health, but their own reputations and perquisites. The scientific and medical communities have a great deal of face to lose. It is not much of an exaggeration to state that when the HIV-AIDS hypothesis is finally recognized as wrong, the entire institution of science will lose the public's trust, and science itself will experience fundamental, profound, and long-lasting changes. The scientific community has risked its credibility.